All right, listen up. We are back with another episode of the Construction Mentor Podcast. My name is Ike. I am your host. As always, you can follow me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. You can catch this podcast on all major platforms. And today, what are we here to do? Same thing that we're here to do every day that we have an episode. We're here to educate people about opportunities in the construction industry. If you're already in the construction industry, how to take your career to the next level. And we have an awesome guests that I finally got to meet in person. We've been talking on social media for, I don't know, it's been at least a couple months, maybe even a year. Yeah, but I got to meet him at a trade show last week, and we can talk about maybe what trade shows are. But we have Scott Sheffield, no relation to Gary Sheffield, if anybody's a sports fan. Scott has a very interesting story. A lot of people have been reaching out to me recently that have military experience and the effect that that has on their life, you know, thereafter. Scott also used to be a fat guy. So I think he's lost over 90 pounds. We can talk about that. And we can talk about how he got into the world of construction sales and being a material or equipment supplier slash vendor, what that career path was like. Because I think it's an option for a lot of people, especially coming out of the field, that they can go into, and their field experience enhances their ability to do just that. And, you know, one thing that we definitely saw the other day is the power that people have as influencers. Everybody, all the young people want to be influencers. And I heard some numbers of what people are making as influencers in the construction world. So with that, yeah, Gary, Scott, how are you?
Good, man. Good. You know, I used to tell people, they'd ask me how to spell my last name, I would say like Gary. And they were like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, and he hasn't been around for a while. So he he's probably been retired for what, like 12, 15 years or something like that. So
at least.
Yeah, he's the young bucks out there. They don't know. I mean, when I was a kid, Gary Sheffield, when you were playing wiffle ball in the backyard, you did the, you know, right, the bat elbow tilt that he had with the tape, and he taped up his bat a certain way that was like a checker, right? I definitely did that in my backyard for sure.
Yeah. It's funny. I went to, when I was stationed in San Diego, I went to a Padres game while he was playing for the Padres, and I was in outfield right behind him, and I was yelling at him, and you know, it was kind of just one of those things that was pretty funny. But so, yeah, my story a little bit.
And just so you guys know, definitely no relation for those on audio. Scott is not the same complexion as Gary. So no, they're definitely not related.
Not even close. Not even close, right?
I'm sorry. Go into your story. Why don't you start, Scott? Why don't you start with where you were, you know, before the Marines? Like what was it like being a young Scott, and what were the options you were looking at?
So I grew up in a small town, Southeast Texas, right on the Gulf of Mexico. My mom's family's Cajun, you know, hunts alligators, has a shrimp boat, small town community. I had a really good childhood, to be honest. My parents are still married. I have two younger brothers, but it was very sheltered and kind of strict, right? I didn't really go anywhere. I didn't really do much. I'm not going to say we were poor, but we didn't have a lot, but we had a good, strong family. You know, all my family lived within 15 minutes of me, both sides of my grandparents. Everybody was close, but we never really went anywhere else. No restaurants, no vacations. If we left, it was to go play sports.
Your world was small.
Small.
Basically, really, right? Small. Your world was very small when you were growing up. And really, you definitely weren't privileged. You didn't have a lot. Yeah. Doesn't sound like you starved, but you didn't have a lot.
Right. So fast forward, I joined the Marines. I left a month after I graduated high school. You know, I worked in the construction field a little bit throughout high school. I worked on a roofing crew carrying shingles a little bit. I did some landscaping. I did some basic construction with family members, some plumbing, a couple bathroom remodels, a few things there. And that was my first introduction to anything construction related. So fast forward, I joined the Marines. I go to California for boot camp. I'd never been on an airplane before.
Can I ask you, Scott, like what was it about the Marines instead of just going into construction? Was it love of the country? Was it just that's what people did?
It was a little bit of both, you know. Growing up, I told anytime somebody asked me what I was going to do with my life, I said I was going to be G.I. Joe. I wanted to do that. And then when I started talking to the recruiters and different things like that, I felt like if I was going to do it, I had to do it all the way. There was no half-ass in it, no shortcuts, no nothing. If I was going to do it, I was going to be all in and do the hardest version possible. You know, I wanted the full experience. I didn't want to have any regrets. I didn't want to have any worries. I didn't want to be like, well, what if, you know, and then I talked to all the recruiters, and no disrespect to anybody else, but when I talked to the Air Force and Army recruiters, and I'm sorry, the Air Force and Navy recruiters, when I looked at them, I was like, I don't want to be those guys.
Right.
I wanted to do it all the way. It was between the Army and the Marines. Thought the Marines uniforms were a little bit cooler. you know?
Yeah.
They
here's the better jersey.
Yeah. Right. Right. And then I thought they were the ones that were the most honest to me as a recruiter. They told me this is going to be hard. You're not going to like it. But if you make it through, you'll have experiences that other people only dream of. And when I heard that, I was just like, damn.
Now, this was in peacetime, but yeah, it quickly became not peacetime. I think if you talk to anybody that is or was in the Marines, I have friends and family, tons of friends and family that have been in the Marines. The people that were in the early 2000s had a pretty cranked up experience, right? So yeah. You went in what, like 99 2000?
98. I went in 98.
Okay,
so I go to California, then my first duty station was in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about culture shock.
Different.
It's a whole new world, right?
Yeah.
And to be honest, I had a level of freedom I'd never experienced before, and I went a little nuts. Started drinking mm-hmm. a lot, started partying a lot, started doing a lot of things because just I didn't know what to do. I'd never had that right. kind of freedom.
Freedom, money, no expense while you're in the Marines.
Right.
Right. So you had nothing to, my you know, I have a, we'll call him a cousin, who was in the Navy around the same time. And he was mm-hmm. going to Japan and he was going everywhere. And it was like, what'd you learn? And I remember I wasn't even in high school yet. And he's like, I learned how to drink. You know, he was pretty much going nuts as, you know, for whatever boat he was going on all over the world, which obviously you can develop bad habits. And I feel like that might be what you're alluding to now.
That was the start of some of my bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's things you can get away with at 18 that you can't really do to your body when you're in your 30s and 40s.
Oh, yeah. I feel that you're older than me, but trust me.
Right.
Yeah. You hit 30, it gets worse, a lot worse.
So
every year
that was the start of some of my bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
My job, I was a construction lineman. So I learned to climb telephone poles, build towers, do radio towers, different things like that. All in the
Marines.
In the Marines. So I was doing some construction communications work both while I was in the Marines. So that was the next phase of my construction background was.
Gotcha.
Climbing, installing telephone poles, running phone lines, building towers, installing the satellite dishes on towers.
Now, so, did they put you through a trade school? And, you know, are you doing combat training while you're also learning how to turn a wrench?
Right.
Like, is that what happens?
So you do some basic infantry school first, and then you go mm-hmm. to your specialty school. And my specialty school was communications construction lineman school.
Okay.
So I learned how to run telephone pole and telephone lines and switchboard operator, and then progressed into the construction portion of that.
Now, the purpose of that being setting up bases in different countries, is that setting up bases, the infrastructure in for bases?
The infrastructure for a base, a forward observation post, a command center, they all mm-hmm. use satellite signal, radio signal, phone lines to communicate before they plan assaults or while different combat maneuvers are going on, they have communications, and that's mostly what I did.
So I want to build a picture, right? You point out Lone Survivor or any other, you know, military movie where they're at these bases and everything's cardboard, definitely not cardboard, plywood,
right.
You know, they have all these plywood rooms and they have all these big things set up. When you think about that, somebody has to get paid to set that up and not only just build those walls, but heavy infrastructure. So if you're sitting at home or you're at work, imagine having your internet go down. Well, imagine that happening to the Marines. Can't have it. Might mean somebody's life, right? And that's the type of stuff that you were setting up.
And you know, that's kind of one of the things that started this. You may not think it, but like you just said, if somebody on the other end is in a firefight and they're calling in for support and their phone line, their internet, whatever goes down, people are going to die. Mm-hmm. And those, it's not just an inconvenience because my internet doesn't work today.
So how much of that is internal to the military versus private contracting?
Most is internal.
I'd really?
Say 80-20.
Okay. Interesting. And is there any benefit to, this is totally news to me. I have actually never thought about this and I didn't know that you're going to go here. So this is good.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this before, but is there a transition other than like a helmet to hard hat? Do you get credits to any sort of retirement in the any union or anything like that coming out? If you're unaware, then that's fine. Don't feel like you have to have an answer, but it's very interesting.
There are some, but not a lot that I know of specifically.
Okay.
There are other, you know, there are combat electricians and things like that that transfer, like the Seabees in the Navy do more of that kind of infrastructure, and their training can transfer into union, you know, plumbers union, electricians union, those kind of things.
Do you get a license?
No license.
No, because you're not even doing anything in the States anyway. So,
right.
Right.
So it's a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, from there, that was my job for three-ish years, is just going to different parts of the world, training for combat, setting up these command centers, things like that, tear them down, move, set it up again to prepare for if and when something came along.
And then it comes along in 2001.
And it comes along, right? In between there, I had an injury. I fell off a telephone pole first time. Yeah. That was
okay. That must have hurt
a little bit. That was
a little. Did you hurt a little bit of everything? Did you break something?
Yeah, I tore my ACL and had some compressed discs in my back from that.
Okay. So, wow.
That's phase two of my health problems. Is, you know, I developed a little bit of a drinking problem. Then I had these injuries. You know, then started down a kind of a rabbit hole of self hate and self deprecation because of. Now I physically can't do some of the things that I want to do. And then that caused more drinking and it just kind of progressed from there.
Downward spiral. Time. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, September 11th hits while I'm on active duty and we went from everything's peacetime and just training exercise to here's the real deal. Mm-hmm. Right. My unit, I wasn't with a lot of those guys at first, but my unit went into Iraq, Afghanistan, did the things right. We didn't lose. I think we lost one person in combat. And that was it. So, you know, but there's a whole nother world of PTSD, different emotional problems that come along with that. Right.
Right.
Okay. Then started drinking a little bit more. Right. Had a heat stroke one day. Because I was highly dehydrated.
Yeah, highly dehydrated from drinking. Plus, it's hot as heck in the Middle East.
Right. And then I had a heat stroke.
Yeah. You don't need any help getting dehydrated in the Middle East.
No.
So being hungover just accelerates it.
Right. Then it came time for my discharge to be up because I had a couple of knee surgeries by then.
So you hadn't faced combat at all at that point because you were on the mend, basically. Yep. So you're sitting over there and rehabbing and whatever, trying to get ready to get back or get thrown into it.
Right. So, you know, I have had a lot of another level of self-doubt, self-hatred, things like that, because I was this injured in my head loser that wasn't able to go do these things because I was hurt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then I get discharged, get out. And that's when some of the PTSD stuff started, was the transition getting out of the military and being an everyday civilian, right? Mm. I went from a world where I could grab somebody by the throat and throw them up against the wall if they made me angry because I was the sergeant,
right?
To the way I had to talk to people and interact with people and even carry on a normal conversation was completely different. And I had to relearn everything about my life. And
yeah, you had to reassimilate to society, right? It's not a clear chain of command in society. Everything's gray area. The way you treat people, the way you talk to people, especially in the last 10 years, it changes by the month. What's acceptable and what's not acceptable, right?
Right. And that's when my drinking went to the max, was during that transition time. And it wasn't an addiction thing, I've learned later. It was a coping mechanism. Some of it was boredom. And most of it was just trying to calm my mind enough to forget and numb myself.
Numb's always the word that everybody goes to.
It is. I just wanted to be numb and not deal with it. You know.
And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, a lot of ex-military or veterans have a bad rap for the way they act when they feel numb in public.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. 100%.
Did you have issues with that as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it would come out as some anger issues, some things like that, you know, or I was just, what's the right way to, just not around. I would just remove myself from people.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you deal with that? Did it come to a head? Did somebody end up, you know, reality end up slapping you in the face? Did you lose somebody? How long did it go on for?
It went on almost every day for the first year.
Wow.
Like I drank almost a fifth of Jack at night for a year.
Until steam came out of your ears and you had enough with whoever you were around, or somebody pissed you off or looked at you the wrong way or whatever it was.
Really what came to a head is the girl I was dating, who is my wife now for 21 years this summer, basically said, you know, let me step back. She was a very kind hearted, goody goody little church girl that was very much the opposite of who I was at that point, but very much in line with who I was before I left for the Marines.
Yeah. She wasn't the rambunctious Marine drinking a fifth of Jack and getting in a fight every night. She's mild mannered sweetheart.
Yes. And she basically said, look, either you get it together, we stay together and we get married, or you need to get out of my life. And that was what.
And you obliged.
And I did.
That was enough to clean it up.
that was enough to clean it up enough.
Enough to get by.
So I
I think you hit something pretty good. I always like highlighting the important stuff, especially for the young men out there, because we need young men. I got young men in my neighborhood that ask me for dating advice, and they come to me with their girl problems in high school and try to put them in the right direction. And the thing that I can tell people is, my wife, same thing. You meet the right one, you know you met the right one when they make you realize the man that you want to be.
Absolutely. Right?
Not to say that they run the show and they set the standard and that you march to the beat of their drum, but they genuinely, without even really saying it, inspire you to be a better man, right? And sometimes they do have to say it, right? That's where it hit with you. And my wife's done the same thing to me. I've hit some lows where she's had to, you know, set me straight, and I'm thankful for it, right?
Sure.
So there's a fine balance to everything. But for the young men out there, you know, it's incredible that you found it and that you acknowledge it. I think that there's a notion out there that young men want it easy, right? My girlfriend lets me do this. She lets me go on this trip. Yeah. She lets me do this with my guy friends. She lets me watch football. She lets me do all this stuff, right? Like women are supposed to walk all over us, and it's about what they let us do. And that's not always the case, right? You want somebody to hold you to a standard and to inspire the best out of you. So she did that, and it was enough to get by. Where'd you go from there? I mean, so are you working at this point? Like, what'd you do when you got out? Did you go straight to construction or?
No. So I was doing a couple of things. I was running a landscape crew a little bit here and there. I was doing that, but I was also I was going to college. I started going to college for, I only did one semester, but I started going to college, but I was also working on a fiber optic crew, like running fiber optic cables through attics and stuff like that.
Fiber optic being your cable and an internet that come into your house.
Yeah. Like back then it was like a Cat 5, running Cat 5 cables and doing all the, you know, the network installation for homes and for businesses.
Back when people had DSL.
Yeah.
Back on people from AOL dial-up to DSL. Yeah, before that we had the stuff that we have today.
I mean, some of these people probably don't even know what that is.
No, it was, put it this way, when in the early days of the internet, mid-2000s, DSL was the shit. Yeah, that was like lightning speed at the time.
Right.
But different world.
Yep. So I did that, and then I lost my house and everything I had in a hurricane. So Hurricane Rita 2005 came through and destroyed the area I lived in. And
okay.
At that point, I evacuated to Dallas to just ride out the storm. Mm-hmm. I went back home to assess the damage, and there was nothing.
Wow. Okay.
That was pretty dramatic.
And that was your first home after the Marines and something that you bought. And
yeah. So that was pretty traumatic again. Right. So started drinking a little bit more again after that.
So you're out of the Marines. You get your first house. Hurricane Rita comes. Wipes everything away. Everything that you worked hard for, everything that you put your life on the line for in the Marines is gone in an instant.
Yep.
And you turn to the bottle, right? You start drinking heavy again. What I would say is that although you were getting better because of the standard and the path that your wife set you on, you were not a man that I would say had wide shoulders or broad shoulders at that time.
No.
Can you talk about if somebody were to face tragedy, whether it's a hurricane or losing somebody important in their life or maybe their business tanks, what's the importance of understanding that it's not when shit happens or tragedy finds you in your life, it's going to happen. It's a matter of how you react to it and being prepared with broad shoulders, right, to carry that load.
Yeah. So first it was my childhood and the people I saw around me never had major, huge tragedy like that. I saw long-term struggle, right? Whether that's poverty, different things like that. But I never experienced immediate, huge, life-changing, dramatic struggle like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I could deal with a long-term struggle, and I knew what that looked like. But a catastrophic change in life, I didn't know how to react to that.
Sure.
But now looking back, whether anybody you see that's famous, that's well-to-do, that has their stuff together, has experienced multiple tragedies and failures in their life. Everybody you look at that's rich and famous has been broke before. They've lost everything before.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to everyone. You know, somebody told me one time, and I didn't realize the wisdom in this in the moment. But when I was going through that, they said everything will be okay in the end, because if it's not okay, it's not the end.
It's true. Somebody told me after Hurricane Ian here, you know, I'm in Southwest Florida, Hurricane Ian.
Right.
Worst thing people have seen here. People lived here 7 years, never seen anything like it. And I was out on Sanibel Island, and the guy looked at me, and his house was blown to smithereens. And he just looked and he said, if money can fix it, it's not a tragedy. I'm here.
Right. Like I look all the time in the grand scheme of all things in the history of mankind. Mm-hmm. How much does this matter? It doesn't. So calm down, assess the situation, and move on, because you can come back from it, whatever it is.
Talk to me, because I did want to hit on it, and I don't want to get away from it now that we're already kind of there. Then you had a coping mechanism, and it was alcohol. Today, I know that you're in a group, right? And I think there's an importance in brotherhood and 100%. Community and support, surrounding yourself with the right people with the same mindset and, you know, rooting for each other, heading in the right direction. Personal growth is the mantra, right? Talk about that presence in your life, what you have today, and what maybe you wish you would have then.
Yeah. So I had a brotherhood when I was in the Marines, a strong brotherhood that I could share anything with anybody, and we could face the world together and conquer anything that came to us. I had a 20-year gap that I didn't really have that in my life. And I searched for that in other places, right? Now I have this group that I'm in with other like-minded leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, business leaders, that we share our wins, our losses. We have a cycle we go through daily and weekly. We share, I told you about this, we have a core four that we do daily. It's body, being, balance, and business. And we have to do something to improve ourselves physically, emotionally, in our family circle, and in our business every day. And we have to post in our group every day what we did to improve ourselves in those areas.
And that sounds like an incredible, listen, that sounds like an incredible commitment, and like anybody needs homework or something extra to do. But I've done similar things. Like there's the power list that Andy Frisella talks about. You and I, obviously, you know, you get the Buffalo Mentality hat on. I got the First Form hat on. You know, there's 75 Hard and Live Hard and all these programs. And when you do these types of things, you know, there's a huge snowball, positive snowball effect. And I can't describe what that's like in your life and the huge impact that it can have on you. And I know that there's a lot of people listening, and I know because I mentioned to you the other day, so many people have reached out to me that struggle with either drug addiction or bankruptcy or, you know, whatever they've done to screw up their life, and they don't know what to do. And I think that's missing from our construction community. I think there's some pockets of it, you know, what that you're in. And that's honestly, that's how you and I met, right? Because we just have so many paths that we cross. So it's important. It's really important.
It is. And, you know, one of our biggest things is that you have to work on the business man before you can work on the business plan.
I like that. You put that on a shirt. Right? Go ahead.
Think about it. It's true. Like if you devote all your time and energy into growing your business, but you personally are a wreck, your family's a wreck, you will never be successful.
Yeah. I equate that to building a strong foundation. Just, hey, we're on a construction podcast, right? Building's not going to stand. You can have the strongest steel columns and beams and, you know, floor that you can have, slabs that you can have. But if you don't have a strong foundation, you're going to crumble. And when tragedy finds you, it will find you, you're not going to be able to handle it. So finding brotherhood, finding groups, finding ways to hold yourself accountable, to be always growing. If you're not growing, you're dying, right? It can make all the difference. And I think you and I probably along the same timeline, the last couple of years, we found that. Wish I had it earlier, but
yeah, same.
But I wasn't looking either.
You know, somebody told me, and this kind of stuck with me too, in your fitness journey, when's the best time to start? 3 years ago. What's the second best time to start? Today.
Today, right. Yeah. Yeah. When's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. When's the second best time? Today.
Today.
Right.
You know, it's right there. So, but yeah, this group, you know, I found this group a couple of years after I started my fitness journey, but it's been extremely impactful in my life to have a group of 8 to 10 other men trying to do the same things in their life, become a better father, become a better husband, be a better leader. And oh, by the way, grow a business at the same time.
I promise you, if you do what Scott's saying right here, right now, opportunities will find you. It wasn't until I've always achieved very well. I've always shined, but I've had my issues as well and failures as well in my life. It wasn't until I started focusing on myself, being a better man, being a better father and husband at home, and that foundation got better and my physical fitness got better. It wasn't until I developed that foundation that, oh, all of a sudden in the last year, I have had more huge career opportunities come my way, and very important people in high places recognize me, who I am, and the value that I can deliver. And to be honest with you, I'm blessed that it didn't happen until now, because I wouldn't have been able to handle it 5 years ago. Right. I wouldn't have been able to handle it 10 years ago, no matter how young I was, because I didn't have a strong foundation. You have to build a strong foundation, and you don't have to do it alone, right? There are people like Scott, there are people like myself, there are groups out there, there's different things for everybody. There's no one solve, but you gotta find something.
Well, there's, if when you're working on yourself and improving yourself and getting better, you start seeing that in yourself. Mm-hmm. Not only does it improve your confidence, but you're also, people see it in you, and you can walk mm-hmm. into a room and command the room when you know you're the man, when you're physically fit, and that's right. Other people are like, damn, who is that guy?
Yeah. There's a set, right? There is a presence, a sense of command that when you walk in the room and you're the fittest dude in the room or girl in the room, people recognize. You got an automatic sense of credibility.
People look at you and know to get to that point, especially if you're older, the effort and focus and determination it takes to get there or to remain there, right? Like right. people, you automatically walk into a room with respect and credibility.
Now you're talking to a guy, like I said, that has lost a serious amount of weight. Scott was a fat dude for a while, right?
For a long time. Like 20 years
as a fat mofo. I saw the picture with the shirt off. It was soggy.
Right. Yeah.
So
it was bad.
How much weight did you lose and how long did it take you to lose it?
So I would, my 41st birthday, November 17th, 2020, I looked in the mirror and I was like, damn, who is this guy? How did I let myself get to this? Mm-hmm. You know, and it all started from allowing myself to make excuses. I've had multiple knee surgeries. I've had some back surgery. I've had shoulder surgery, all these issues. And I use that as an excuse. And I finally got fed up to a point where I was like, no more. I'm not doing this anymore. I looked in the mirror on my 41st birthday and said, am I the man who I want around my kids? Do I want my daughter to marry me? As in, who this type of mentor was no to all of it. I said, I've got to get something going. I've got to change this.
Do me a favor. Say that line again.
Am I the man I want my daughter to marry? No, I wasn't. That was painful. Asking myself that question in the mirror, I broke down. I really did. It was tough.
I think that's an extremely powerful perception. I mean, one of the benefits that I've found in becoming a father and my son about to be born was the thing that kind of sent me on my path that made me realize that, like, am I the man I would want my son to become? Now, as you know, my daughter is... I don't know. My wife might run in here in about 5 minutes and my daughter will be here. She's coming. It's a slap in the face. It is harsh reality in a different way, because your son is one thing. That's your pride and joy. But your daughter is like your heart living outside of your body. And if you're not living up to that standard, the standard that you'd want for that heart,
it's
not a good feeling.
Right now, my daughters are 13 and 11 and my son's 6. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing I had going through my head is my grandfather died at 54 of diabetes and heart-related issues. If I died at 54, I wouldn't see my son turn 18.
So let me just recap that. So you go in the Marines. You absolutely demolish your body. You got PTSD coming out of it. Hurricane comes, takes your house away. You hit 41 years old. You're 90 pounds heavier than you are now. You're a fat ass. You're totally out of shape. You're now in your 40s, past what a lot of people would consider to be middle age, and certainly past middle age by the precedent that your predecessors and your family set. Yet you found something. You found something and it sent you on a different path. And it's incredible to see where you're at now. And I think it's something that, I mean, I know it's something that a lot of people can learn from.
So, you know, what I talk to people about is find your why. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? Why do you do it every day? Why do you get up in the morning? Like, motivation is bullshit. Motivation comes and goes. What do you have in your life that you could be dedicated to beyond measure with no question? Do you think I want to wake up at 5:30 every Saturday and Sunday and 4:30 every weekday? No, I don't want to do that. But I have things that are bigger than me in my life and more important than me. And being here for them is not a question. I have to. So I was... 41st birthday, November 17th, 2020. I was looking in the mirror. I weighed 240, 53% body fat.
It's a lot of fat.
Today,
to be said,
I'm 5'8 and a half on a good day.
Yeah.
I'm not tall, right? So I was 240, 53% body fat. In 14 months, I got down to 170. Okay. So I lost 70 pounds in just over a year. The last 2 years has been more about not just maintaining, but body recomposition, adding muscle, losing body fat. I'm still right at 170, but I've added
to different 170.
Different 170, right? Mm-hmm. Right.
Man, I saw him the other day. I saw him on Friday night. Scott's looking good. It's a good 170. Looks good on him.
Yeah. I'm 44 now. I'll be 45 in November. I'm in better shape than I was in my 20s. I've still had 7 knee reconstructions or 7 knee surgeries. Still had multiple back problems. I still have shoulder problems. I still have all that. But I found ways to adapt and get around and still get it done.
Now,
I work out every day, no matter what.
You've had a tremendous amount of growth in the last 4 years. Your career has also shot up in the last few years. So obviously construction podcasts, I could talk about the personal development stuff all day. I want to tie back in your career, right?
Sure.
So late 2000s, you're doing all kinds of stuff, right? You're on a low voltage crew. You're doing, you know, whatever to keep busy. Then where does your career go? You had a long stint somewhere else, right? Before you got into what you're doing now.
Yeah. I spent 15 years as a store manager and district manager at Lowe's. So
Lowe's, everybody knows Lowe's. Right. And everybody everybody knows Lowe's. And where we're going with this is that construction, the industry, isn't just turning a wrench in the field. Right. There is a retail end of it, a sales end of it. Everybody's got a Lowe's. Everybody's got a Home Depot. So if you're wondering where to take your career and you don't think that working at a place like that can lead you to somewhere higher that Scott will get into in a second, you're wrong.
Absolutely. So it was trial by fire. Realistically, I had the work ethic. I put in the effort. I could do that. But retail, being in front of that many people all day, all the time, taught me how to converse with the public, to carry on a conversation, to be able to look at somebody and understand where they were coming from and read people, right? And then use that to be able to then try and sell them things and influence their decision and upsell. And I don't get me wrong. Some people might look down on that. Some people might think it's a, you know, it's degrading to work at a place like I learned so much. And really, that helped me assimilate back into society.
Listen, I'm telling you right now, I don't care what degree you have at what college and, you know, mechanical engineering and an MBA right here. The best skills that you can have doesn't matter what the industry is, including the construction industry. Ability to communicate, ability to sell. Yeah, you get somebody's got a place for you anywhere you want to go if you can do those two things.
And
the only way to get that is experience. And it doesn't matter where the experience comes from.
Right.
You just got to get the experience.
It doesn't matter where it comes from. And to tie back into that, you know, the plan was my wife was going to finish college because she only had a year. And then I was going to go back. I was going to work at Lowe's until she graduated. And I was going to go back to college. And I was going to be a teacher, make $42,000 a year. And life was going to be great. And I'm not saying it wouldn't have been, but hurricane kind of delayed things, right? By the time she graduated, I was already a manager at Lowe's and I was making more than I ever would as a teacher, right? And then I progressed through the ranks at Lowe's and I was making a good living working at Lowe's, right? Some people don't understand that, but there are managers and people at Lowe's making $200,000+ a year.
I don't know with that. And also, again, the experience that you're getting and knowledge across a spectrum of products and niches in, you know, subcontracting world, you know, different scopes that subcontractors, you know, work with and stuff like that. So you're learning just like you would at a GC. You're learning a little bit, just enough about each trade, about this much of the project, a lot. So I'm holding my fingers for people on audio. I'm holding my fingers together. You learn a little bit about a lot. And then my hands are far apart, right? You're learning about everything. So you can dance you can go to any dance.
And, you know, I learned during my time there, I made it a point to learn as much as I could. I got a horticulture certification from Michigan State. I went through some basic plumbing and electrical training. I went through framers training. I went through all of this knowledge base to be able to sell more, just like you said. And I gained a little bit of knowledge in each one of these segments of the construction trade. I was by no means a master of any of it, but I had enough knowledge to converse and get through and carry on conversation with people to find out what they needed. And the ability to communicate was a huge part because I didn't have that getting out of the Marines. I communicated with my fist.
Yeah. There's no sugarcoat. There's no bedside manner. There's no, you know, appeal. You know, it's just chain of command, do this or you get slapped. that's
pretty
it,
much.
Right? So you get through Lowe's 15-year career. And then in the last 2-3 years, you leave and you go into the world you're in now?
So I've been with Fortress for 6 years now.
6 years. Okay. So 2018-ish. And what does Fortress do and what's your title?
So I am the director of wholesale for Fortress Building Products. So I oversee all of the sales organization for US and Canada through the wholesale channel. So any lumber yard who sells our products, any distributor who distributes our products, I oversee that channel of our business for all of US and Canada.
Yeah. So he's overseeing quite a bit.
A gentleman who worked for me at Lowe's had left and went into Fortress. And he called me one day. He was like, "Hey, you're really good at selling things. There's an opportunity at this company called Fortress. You should check it out." I'm like, man, I don't know. Sales job? It's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Salesman. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I said, like, you're talking about, like, used car sales? Like, I don't want to be a sales guy. But I said, you know, I trust you. I'll check it out. And I came in, talked to the people, learned about what they did. And I was like, these guys just literally just go talk to contractors and lumber yards and teach them stuff. I could do that.
Yeah.
Like, I can talk
to people. So what in North America, what's your sales that are under you? What's the revenue?
We're going to do somewhere in my channel close to 100 million.
That's not bad. That's not bad. So to your point, you know, now you're in your mid 40s. Right. Again, you go through a lot. You come out of the Marines. You got PTSD. Hurricane hits. You're fat. You're probably a little depressed going into your early 40s until you got nowhere to look but up, and you got nowhere to go but up. So then you go up, and you're at Lowe's. If I told any kid in high school that you were at Lowe's for 15 years, people, they'd probably, like you said, they'd look down on it, not knowing you can make a couple hundred grand at Lowe's, you know, running stuff. Right. And now you're in a position where you're selling to contractors with all this trade knowledge that you've developed over the last, you know, 20 years, whether it be Lowe's or Texas or the Marines, and you're selling almost $100 million, probably soon to be over $100 million in product. And that's all under you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I were to describe a successful everything for outdoor living. So he's selling to lumber yards and contractors basically across the country for outdoor living. We're talking decks, pergolas, you know, literally just outdoor luxurious spaces, right?
Like this one.
Like the one behind him. If you're on the video feed. If I were to tell anybody, hey, you're gonna go to college, you're gonna get this job, and then you're gonna become a director or a manager or a VP of some kind, overseeing $100 million in sales, that would sound like a successful career to me. Wouldn't anybody that's young or at any age be interested in that career path? They should be. And I honestly don't think that they're aware that it's available to them. And it could start with working at Lowe's.
Easily. With no no
college debt, no nothing. Your experience. Imagine working at 4 years at Lowe's. 4 years of retail experience, communicating, selling. They probably have internal training on products. Every time somebody comes in, or every time somebody has a new product or even existing products, I'm sure they have refresher programs. Lowe's probably has more education that is applicable to the general public than a construction management degree. I'd be willing to bet.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. There are thousands of courses that you can take, learning courses, Lowe's and Home Depot both. They are full because they want their staff to be educated enough to speak intelligently to people.
Sure. And I don't know if you've noticed, but Home Depot and Lowe's are doing pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. In fact,
listen, Scott, we've got 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to address? Is there anything that you want to send out there to the world? I'd like to give you an opportunity.
You know, there's a couple of things I would say. First, everyone wants community. Everyone. So if you feel like you're alone, you feel like you don't have people to turn to, there are other people out there that feel the same way. They are looking for like-minded people to relate to and converse with and have community with. Mm-hmm. It's animal instinct. Look at chimpanzees or what, they all have family groups that they hoard into for safety and comfort. Everyone wants that. And those groups are out there if you choose to seek them. And if you can't find one, start one.
And like I say, you know, it's like projecting light, right? When you project light, you do positive things, you project what you're about into the world. Darkness leaves your life, but then people can also find you. That's how I found somebody like Scott. And through multiple avenues, Scott and I connected. Had I not done this podcast, had I not got involved with First Form and 75 Hard, wouldn't know who Scott Sheffield was.
Yeah, they're out there. And people want to be a part of it. The last thing I would say is kind of in the same lines. No matter how bad you think it is, no matter what you're going through, other people have gone through it. There are people who can relate to you. You're never, ever, ever alone. Ever. Mm-hmm. You know, I lost more people that I served with to suicide than I did to combat. Think about that. I've lost more veterans that I served with to suicide than anything else because they all felt like they were alone and nobody understood what they were going through.
It's about building a foundation, and that foundation doesn't and shouldn't be built alone. You're not alone.
You know, if your efforts change the life and influence one person, it's all worth it.
Yeah, think about that. You know, social media, everybody thinks that you got to have a million likes and views and whatever. I always ask myself before I post something, what I want my son to see this or hear this. If you had 10 people, if you got 10 likes on something and you had 10 people that stood in front of you and told you that they liked what you just said or that it impacted them, how would that make you feel, right? If you post something and 100 people see it, picture 100 people in front of you speaking, you'd be probably scared shitless to speak. Public speaking is very bad. It's a very bad experience for a lot of people. I think you told me that the other night, that you're good in front of a camera, but in front of a crowd, it can get it can get bad, right? But if only 100 people see it on social media, people get discouraged when we talk about projecting that light, right? There's no reason to.
And then the last thing, you know, you commented on my hat. It's actually a friend of mine's clothing company, but Buffalo mentality. What that is, if you have a buffalo and a cow next to each other and a storm is coming, the cow will turn and run from the storm. And when the storm catches the cow, it will stay in the storm longer because it's running the same direction as the storm. Right. And it will be in it exponentially longer through the fight. A buffalo will turn and face the fight or the storm head on, get through it, and be in the calm.
I love that.
Right? We spend so much of our lives running from the storm and running from our problems instead of facing them, owning them, and getting through them.
Amen. I'm not even going to try to add anything to that. Well said, Scott. Well, listen, Scott, I appreciate you coming on here. I don't think it's the last time I'm going to have you on here. I'd like to have you on again. I think you have a lot to add when it comes to especially being a father. I know as a person, a man who's about to become the father of a daughter, Scott taught me some things the other day that I'm definitely going to take on. So again, Scott, I appreciate you coming on. I know you're busy. If you want to follow Scott, you know, see what Scott's about. Scott, can people find you on Instagram?
Yeah. My Instagram is SimC_2513 was my job code in the Marines.
Beautiful. And I'm going to tag him in all the posts. So guys, again, this is the Construction Mentor Podcast. My name is Ike. I am your host, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. You can catch this podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks, guys.